15. The verse is Scheduled Incarnations. That's the title of the chapter. And it corresponds with Canto 1, Chapter 3, which similarly is a listing, a short list, of different incarnations, or avatars, forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. The entire subject of Srimad Bhagavatam is Satyam Param Dhimahi. It's a description of the Absolute Truth. Satyam Param Dhimahi. And that Absolute Truth is Krishna. That from which, or he from whom, everything else comes. So one of the questions in the first canto, chapter 1, asked by Shaunaka and the sages of Suta Goswami was, please describe those forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. So he obliges that question by giving a little bit longer short list, and then identifying in the course of that list the Paribhasya Sutra, or the essence of the entire 18,000 verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is that Krishna is the source of all of them, as Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is the source of all the different forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. Interestingly, in that list that precedes 1328, Krishna's name is identified, which, if that alone was the looked upon or referred to, one would rightly say, because the beginning of the chapter is the form, the Purusha avatars, the forms of Vishnu, and then from the forms of Vishnu, whose function it is to create the universe and maintain the universe and see to its annihilation, the withdrawal of the universe, forms of the Lord appear as avatars of Vishnu, like we're commonly used to hearing. The Lila avatars, primarily, when people think of avatars, it's the Lila avatars, but there's six different types. They're avatars of Vishnu, and Krishna is listed amongst the avatars of Vishnu. And then the Srimad Bhagavatam says that amongst all of these avatars, one is the avatari, or the source of all of them. So it's a very important verse. It's the Paribhasya Sutra of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Krishna is the source of all Vishnu forms and all the avatars of Vishnu. And yet he appears as a Leela, as an avatar of Vishnu, although he's the source of Vishnu and everything else that exists. He's the Satyam Param, the Absolute Truth. Similar to the Paribhasya Sutra of Sri Brahma Samhita, same thing is declared. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. That's the message of Sri Brahma Samhita also, which, according to Lord Chaitanya, in a very short, compressed form, explains the essence of all truths found in Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not a commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's just a very, very skinny, compact sutra form of Srimad Bhagavatam. It has 61 verses, and Bhagavatam has 18,000 verses, but the message is the same because the Paribhashya Sutra is the same. Krishna, Ishvara, Parama Krishna is the Sarvakarana Karanam. He's the absolute truth from which everything comes. So, chapter 3 is a response to the question, please describe those forms of the Lord who descend and appear within this world. So Krishna is listed amongst them. And Lord Vishnu, who rescues Gajendra, is being described in this verse that was selected from chapter 7 of Canto 2, another short list. And then, of course, in the 8th canto, a more detailed description of the Gajendra Moksha Leela, where Lord Vishnu appears and rescues his dear devotee. And I'll read the verse, but first I'll just give the description that's found in the 8th canto of the type of devotee that Gajendra was in his previous life and in his life as Gajendra. Very nice. And actually very relevant for our practices in sadhana bhakti today. Maharaj Parikshit describes, when asked about Lord Vishnu, how he rescued Gajendra. Who was this Gajendra? Why was he so much favored by Lord Vishnu? Could we do this? Could we like move in a little bit? Everybody move in a little bit, or more than a little bit? Take the harmonium and pull it in a little bit. And then we'll have room for everybody. And if you don't move in, we won't have room for everybody. You're on one side of the pillar and she's on the other.
I'm on one side.
It's a pillar in between, okay. At least my vision, that's all. Gajendra Moksha. So, who was this Gajendra? And why was he so favored by Lord Vishnu? And Shukadeva Goswami describes, I'll just add one other thing. When I was, last time I was in New York was a while ago, but I was asked that the verses that they're speaking on at 26 Second Avenue, they have a Saturday program there, was those verses towards the end of the 6th chapter, which we can identify as the fate of the unsuccessful yogi. Arjuna has a doubt. What happens if someone practices? They leave behind their material situation, focusing more and more and exclusively on their spiritual destiny, and they don't make it. Aren't they nowhere? They're neither here nor there, like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere. So Krishna says, no, 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 and gives a nice description of what happens to one who doesn't complete. So he offers basically three situations. First, he says that whatever spiritual practice is performed is never lost. Prabhupada's simple way of saying is like a bank account. You put money in a bank account, and in this life, in your next life, there's no bank account. In your name, at least. But a spiritual bank account, if you put in 10%, then next birth it's 11%. With interest. And whatever, so whatever you invest spiritually, it's never lost. And so Krishna says essentially the same thing. If one isn't complete in his spiritual practice, then either A, B, or C. Either one goes to the heavenly planets, enjoys for a long, 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 long time the opulence of heavenly existence, and then comes again to this earthly realm to take birth in either a aristocratic family, Prabhupada translates that, or a Brahmana family, so that one can continue in their next life, in that life, where they left off. Or, even better, is one just directly takes birth in the family of devotees. Did you take birth in a family of devotees? Yes? Kind of? You have to think about it, huh? Well, those that have, very fortunate, according to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, so from that position one can directly, no detour, no long circuitous roundabout, then come back and take it up again. Immediately take it up again. Very fortunate. So our devotee children are very special souls and should be regarded like that, and parents of those very special souls should recognize the wonderful service that has been entrusted to you to help that soul complete their journey. In fact, that's your service, your job assignment. Take that soul, assist that soul, like you can't force, but assist that soul to complete the process and deliver the pendant from the cycle of birth and death. That's a nice service, but you have to be very qualified to do that service. So prepare yourselves and do that service carefully. So Gajendra, Shukadeva Goswami explains, in his previous life, although he was in the body of an elephant, in his previous life he was a king. And, you know, even if you're a king, you could become an elephant or an animal. And it wasn't nice to go from a king to an animal, but how it happened was, towards the latter part of his life, after he had completed being a religious king and performing all his duties nicely and all of that, he turned over the kingdom to his eldest son and went to live on a mountaintop or somewhere in a cave in a simple hermitage situation, and was focusing on completing his spiritual life in perfection. This is in Satyayuga. And the king's name was King Indradumna, and one sage came traveling in this secluded place and saw the hermitage of the king and went to request water and, you know, the basic elements of reception from that person, the king. But the king was absorbed in meditation, so he didn't receive the sage. And the sage, somehow sages sometimes do things that sages aren't supposed to do. He got angry. What? What kind of a king are you? You don't even know how to receive a saintly person? You're such a dull personality. You should become an elephant. Very dull beast creature. So, that's what happened. The curse of the sage was very effective. He became an elephant, but when he became an elephant in his next life, he wasn't just an ordinary elephant, he was king of elephants, with lots of other elephants following around, and, you know, big, and lots of she-elephants, and living a grand life, as elephants might do. And one day, there's a description of, they came across a wonderful lake, the details of the flowering trees around the lake and the fragrances of those flowers being carried by the breeze and the humming bees and the swans and the different birds, and you know, like paradise, a lake in paradise somewhere. And along with all the elephants, they entered into the lake to take their bath. And as the elephants withdrew from the lake, the crocodile that was living in the lake didn't like intrusion and chomped on the leg of Gajendra, the king of the elephants. And he started shaking his leg to get free from the crocodile. But the crocodile was stronger. The fighting went on for 100 celestial years. That's a long time to fight. Day and night, for 100 years. He was becoming fatigued. And then he had one of those uh-oh experiences, that he was finished. He was going to lose. And when that entered his consciousness, not just fighting, but it's a losing battle and it means death. Because of his previous life's activity as King Indradumna, some very fortunate remembrance, Haribo. You want Kirtan? Kirtan is upstairs. You just don't hear it yet. Okay. So, he remembered, by prompt of Supersoul, some prayers that he had recited as the king. So, in literal desperation of life and death, with great feeling, that kind of feeling, life and death feeling, he began reciting those same prayers. Same prayers. And in the course of reciting those same prayers, he got to a point in reciting the prayers that he realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead will surely come and rescue me from this danger of the crocodile on my leg. And so, in a spontaneous way, his prayers moved to a different position of, rather than, you know, get the crocodile off my leg, it was, please, when you complete this position and I'm no longer entangled in this difficult circumstance of life, please let me never forget you. Please keep me always engaged in your eternal service. Even with the crocodile on his leg, he was praying like that. And then Lord Vishnu came. He wants to talk, so there's a place for that. Just don't do that. Just take him to a place where he can talk. He wants to talk. See you later. No problem. Children are children. Just, I think, next time there is a class, you'll know what to expect, so you should be near the door. Now I'm going to read the verse, actually there's two verses, where again Shukadeva Goswami is describing the two verses, the exchange between Lord Vishnu and Gajendra. The leader of the elephants, whose leg was attacked in a river, here it says river, the eighth canto, it's a lake, by a crocodile of superior strength, was much aggrieved. Taking a lotus flower in his trunk, he addressed the Lord, saying, "Oh, original enjoyer, Lord of the universe, oh, deliverer, as famous as a place of pilgrimage, all are purified simply by hearing your holy name, which is worthy of being chanted." So guess what the purport is about? Prayer and chanting. And then, the personality of Godhead, this is text 16, hearing the elephant's plea, felt that the elephant needed his immediate help, for he was in great distress. Thus at once the Lord appeared there on the wings of the king of birds, Garuda, fully equipped with his weapon, the wheel or chakra. With the wheel, he cut to pieces the chomping part of the crocodile, the mouth of the crocodile, to save the elephant. And he delivered the elephant by lifting him by his trunk. Two, seven, 15, 16. He delivered the elephant by lifting him by his trunk. And he was a big elephant. But he had a big trunk. And the Lord picked him up by his trunk. So I'll read the purport, which is, it's only 2.5 pages long. But the focus is going to go to prayer. In the eighth canto, Prabhupada writes, just see the importance of, this verse shows us the importance of regular recitation of prayers, in addition to the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is also a prayer. Every devotee should regularly recite some standard prayers or stotras, as did King Indradumna, because even if you, in your next life, become an animal, which isn't supposed to happen, but it was pretty extraordinary how it happened, even in that circumstance, those stotras may be of avail to you to help you reach to the personality of Godhead. So regularly practice, and he suggests the Nrisinga prayers or the Govinda prayers from Brahma Samhita, where one should recite them on a regular basis, daily basis, and enter in, as Prabhupada speaks, enter into the spirit of the hymn, not just mechanical recitation, but understand the meaning, enter into the meaning, meditate on the meaning, become moved, you know, with your heart, moved by the spirit of the prayer. So, here's the purport. The history of delivering the leader of the elephants, whose leg was attacked in a river by the superior strength of a crocodile, is described in the eighth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Since the Lord has absolute knowledge, there is no difference between his holy name and the personality of Godhead. The leader of the elephants was much distressed when he was attacked by the crocodile. Although the elephant is always stronger than the crocodile, the latter is stronger than the elephant when it is in the water. And because the elephant was a great devotee of the Lord in his previous birth, he was able to chant the holy name of the Lord by dint of his past good deeds. Every living entity is always distressed in this material world because this place is such that at every step one has to meet with some kind of distress. You've noticed it, right? Some kind. Every living entity is always distressed in this material world because this place... Oh, I read that. But one who is supported by his past good deeds engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7.16. Those who are supported by impious acts cannot be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, even though they are distressed. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 7:15, the divine and demoniac quality. The personality of Godhead Hari appeared at once on the back of his eternal bearer Garuda and delivered the elephant. Paragraph. The elephant was conscious of his relation with the Supreme Lord. He addressed him as Adi Purusha, or the original enjoyer. Both the Lord and the living beings are conscious and are therefore enjoyers, but the Lord is the original enjoyer because he is the creator of everything. In a family, both the father and his sons are undoubtedly enjoyers, but the father is the original enjoyer and the sons are subsequent enjoyers. A pure devotee knows well that everything in the universe is the property of the Lord, and the living entity can enjoy a thing as ordained by the Lord. A living being cannot even touch a thing which is not allotted to him. This idea of the original enjoyer is explained very nicely in Isha Upanishad. One who knows the difference between the Lord and himself never accepts anything without first offering it to the Lord. Paragraph. The elephant addressed the Lord as Akila Loka Nath, or the Lord of the universe, who is therefore the Lord of the elephant also. The elephant, being a pure devotee of the Lord, specifically deserved to be saved from the attack of the crocodile, and because it is a promise of the Lord that his devotee will never be vanquished, it was quite befitting that the elephant called upon the Lord to protect him. And the merciful Lord also at once responded. The Lord is the protector of everyone, but he is the first protector of one who acknowledges the superiority of the Lord instead of being so falsely proud as to deny the superiority of the Lord or to claim to be equal to him. He is ever superior. A pure devotee of the Lord knows the difference between the Lord and himself. Therefore, a pure devotee is given first preference because of his full dependence, whereas the person who denies the existence of the Lord and declares himself the Lord is called Asura, and as such he is given protection by the strength of the limited power to the sanction of the Lord. Since the Lord is superior to everyone, his perfection is also superior. No one can imagine it. We're more than halfway done. He's going through the terms. We'll review. The elephant addressed the Lord as Tirtha Shrava, or famous as a place of pilgrimage. People go to places of pilgrimage in order to be delivered from the reactions of unknown sinful reactions. But if one can be freed from all sinful reactions simply by remembering his holy name, the Lord is therefore as good as the holy place of pilgrimage. One can be freed from all sinful reactions after reaching a place of pilgrimage, but one can have the same benefit at home or at any place simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord. For a pure devotee, there is no need to go to the holy place of pilgrimage. He can be delivered from all sinful acts simply by remembering the Lord in earnestness. A pure devotee of the Lord never commits any sinful acts, but because the whole world is full of sinful atmosphere, even a pure devotee may commit a sin unconsciously. As a matter of course, one who commits sinful acts consciously cannot be worthy of being a devotee of the Lord, but a pure devotee who unconsciously does something sinful is certainly delivered by the Lord because a pure devotee remembers the Lord always. Almost done. The Lord's holy name is called Shravana Mangala. This means that one receives everything auspicious simply by hearing the holy name. In another place in Srimad Bhagavatam, his holy name is described as Punya Shravana Kirtana. It is a pious act simply to chant and hear all about the Lord. The Lord descends to this earth, on this earth, and acts like others in connection with activities of the world just to create subject matters for hearing about him. Otherwise, the Lord has nothing to do in this world, nor he has any obligation to do anything. He comes out of his own causeless mercy and acts as he desires. The Vedas and the Puranas are full of descriptions of his different activities so that people in general may naturally be eager to hear and read something about his activities. Generally, however, the modern fictions and novels of the world occupy a greater part of people's valuable time. Such literatures cannot do good to anyone. On the contrary, they agitate the young mind unnecessarily and increase the modes of passion and ignorance, leading to increasing bondage to the material conditions. The same aptitude for hearing and reading is better utilized in hearing and reading of the Lord's activities. This will give one all-around benefit. Last paragraph, three sentences. It is concluded, therefore, that the holy name of the Lord and the topics in relation with him are always worth hearing, and therefore he is called here in this verse Nama Deya, or one whose holy name is worth chanting. Actually, it was only one sentence. So it turns out the curse of the sage upon King Indradumna was a benediction of sorts, at least, because in this next life he not only chanted his stotras, but boy did he chant his stotras intensely, because he was in a real fix. He was facing death by this enemy of the elephant, the crocodile. There's many nice things to say. When I was visiting in St. Louis, a little bit before coming here, I don't know how it happened, but there was a middle-aged man, American man, who was coming to all the programs, and he always had something to say. And but it was complimentary, but it was a little, like, you know, a little probing. But, you know, he was from a different background, apparently, I mean, just from his questions. So then after each session, he came forward and we had some discussion. He was a devout Roman Catholic man who had, like, an interest in other persuasions and teachings, and he had apparently read some of the stuff you find on the internet about, you know, Hinduism, and that kind of a person. A nice man. So somehow we got into, I think it was one of the verses that we were discussing, but somehow we got into a discussion about, oh, I know what it was. We got into a discussion about when it happens in life that someone is treated unjustly. I mean, it happens. The other kind also happens, when you didn't do something right and you get credit, and you didn't do something wrong and you get blamed. Or more than blamed, you get... It's harsh, some harsh reaction. So we were discussing the Vaishnava conception. Then he, you know, just, it was only this one time he pulled out his Bible to pull out, because I wanted to hear exactly what the phrase was, where the meek shall inherit the kingdom of God. You know, so how to face adversity or injustice even. And nice dialogue. So the phrase, more or less, was blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the kingdom of God, or attain the kingdom of God, or something like that. And then he was sharing with me his realization, which I really like, so I'll share with you. When that kind of situation comes, as it happened with King Indradumna, he didn't do something wrong, but he was, you know, injustice came to him, and he became an elephant. So his point was, like when an airplane, nice metaphor, is moving along the runway, but it's just sitting still, nothing. It's moving along the runway and there's wind resistance. Uh-oh, wind resistance. But it's that wind resistance that's needed to take the airplane up into the air. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Because of more wind resistance. And then the angle of the wing makes the plane take off into the air. So his point was similarly, how we regard not only the injustice, but, you know, the cause behind the injustice, it's actually good fortune for a religious-minded person or a person who wishes to become more attached to the personality of Godhead than they were before that injustice came. How you address yourself to the injustice is very important. If it's taken as impetus for deeper shelter in the personality of Godhead, fantastic. Bring on the injustices. A little bit, anyways. At least as Queen Kunti prays, you know from her prayers, may calamities come again and again. Why? Who prays for calamities? Because when there's calamity, the devotee turns more intensely, as Gajendra did, more intensely to the place of shelter, as long as you have the right place of shelter. And in that intensity of prayer, the personality of Godhead certainly hears the prayer, and the reciprocation is there. And that's really what we want. We want the relationship with the personality of Godhead, whether it's in this scenario or that scenario. We may have our preference of scenarios. We like this one instead of that one. But whatever the scenario is, the strengthening of our disposition towards taking shelter of the personality in Godhead is wonderful. So in the case of the Pandavas, she reasoned, every time we have a calamity, we call very intensely upon you, and you come. And that's what happened a number of times. When Bhishma Dev looks at their situation, he says to Yudhisthira in the next chapter, normal people wouldn't be able to survive all the tribulations that you had to undergo and list them. It's inhuman. But not only you survived, but Krishna maintained his favor for you always. So, as Kunti was praying, we find in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, when Narada goes to visit the Pandavas, they're having a Pandava conference planning the next calamity. Because when should we have a tribulation, or should we have some enemy attack, or what's the best tribulation to get Krishna to come? Because when there's tribulation for the devotee, Krishna will come. That's not normally how devotees plan, how to have a tribulation. But it illustrates the principle. The reciprocation of the Supreme Lord is there for those who call upon him very sincerely. I've just been reading and discussing King Mushukunda, who had never seen Krishna, like Rukmini had never seen Krishna, and when Krishna appeared before Mushukunda, he didn't even recognize who he was, because he had never seen him before. He only heard a description of him, and he asked him, "Who are you?" And Krishna said who he was. And then Krishna said why he came before him. "Because you prayed, like Gajendra prayed, but not like an ordinary, you know, mechanical something-something, but with feeling. You prayed very sincerely, with great feeling," because he was told by Garga, Garga Muni, the astrologer of the Yadu dynasty, he was told that one day you will see Krishna face to face, although he had never seen him, so he described Krishna to him. So he was meditating upon Krishna and praying for the fulfillment of that desire, that prediction, that he would see Krishna, although he had never seen Krishna. So Krishna came. Krishna said, that's why I came. If we can just find like a little modicum of sincerity, if there, we wouldn't be here doing what we're doing if it wasn't. And then nurture that. That faith in Krishna and Krishna's loving quality and feeling the sense of being protected by Krishna. Love is a protection when the object of love is the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his pure devotees, that love is a protection. And not just he'll come and get his Sudarshan chakra and chop off the head of somebody that's giving us a hard time. But however he wants to give his protection, whatever is suitable for the circumstance, Krishna will do. Whatever it is. And it may not be how we think it should be. In fact, usually it isn't. But that's quite okay. Krishna's protection is there. And that sense of reciprocation with Krishna's protection is very, very wonderful. Very, very wonderful. Very, very wonderful. So, the emphasis in the purport is specifically upon, because it's in the verse, Gajendra called his name. Here it says he calls his name. In the eighth canto, he recited this elaborate stotra. Not only like mechanically from memory, he was deeply feeling the urgency of calling to the Supreme Lord. So, even simply calling the name, because all of that is within the name. He called the name of the worthy one, these nice terms that are identified in the purport. Shravana Mangala, the holy name is that which gives all auspiciousness, everything auspicious, and no inauspiciousness, of Akila Loka Nath, the Lord of the universe, and therefore the Lord of we who are part of that universe. He who is Adi Purusha, the original enjoyer. So any sense that we may have of enjoying propensity, he enjoys first, because everything is his. So anything that we receive, we accept as something ordained by him, not so much so that we can be the enjoyer of this little piece of everything, but utilize in service unto him. This very nice verse by Rupa Goswami. Anyway, it's a whole long discussion. But the real standard of being detached is to accept things. Yatarham upayunjataha, without attachment, only as far as possible, only as far as necessary for his service, and ever striving to maintain while accepting things in his service, to stay in the mood of his service. Nirbanda Krishna Sambande. Yuktam Vairagya Uchite. One who has that spirit, it's just, think of it in practical terms. If you're those of you that are parents and have children, or someone that is looking after others in some way, that they're looking to you as dependents of some nature or another, putting some resource in the hand of a dependent, and the dependent is simply looking to the person from whom that resource has come, and wishing to enjoy, utilize that in the service of the person from whom the resource has come. Isn't that like what you would like to see? I mean, it's love. I'll just share a little anecdotal thing. I shared this once with my sister, then she shared one with me. When we were little, once upon a time we were little, and there were five children in the family, and my father wanted to teach us this nice quality of stewardship. So one of the things that he did was, at our church we had little envelopes where you put something in, and so he would give us money to put something in the little envelope, and we put the envelope in the collection tray as they would pass the collection tray. So teach us the principle of you utilize things in God's service, although he was the source of those things. We just took and put in the envelope, but he was training us in that principle, although we were just children. Because the quality of utilizing things carefully in service of God is an important quality, or behavior at least, and, you know, for some persons becomes a quality, not just a behavior. It's important. And it's trained from childhood. That was at least what my father did. And then another thing was, we had like household chores, and he was very formal. He had like a list, you know, this one does this and that one does that. We're supposed to check the box, and when we checked the box, he was an accountant. So you know, we would accumulate a certain amount, like 25 cents a week or something for whatever it was, mowing the lawn or something or something. And then at the end, you know, when we wanted to go, you know, buy something or do something or whatever it was, there was the money to do it. He was an accountant. That's how he, you know, he wanted to teach us, take your responsible role in the family, to wash the dishes and to whatever the things are, sweep the floors and vacuum the rugs and, you know, check the box and you have your allowance. And little ones got a little less, and little older ones got a little more, like that. So it was, that was how he did it. And I remember specifically thinking, I felt really happy just with the thought. The thought was, gee, after all, this is Dad's money anyways. So let me save up and get Dad something with whatever has accumulated. And I got him something, I wouldn't even say what the something was, but it wasn't something that he could utilize. And I gave him a box of them. And he wanted to know where I get the money. I said it came from my allowance. And I watched his eyes, and tear went rolling down his cheek. Because he was thinking, you know, the gift was just a gift of affection. And he was the source of where that had come from, but the thought of not just going off and, you know, something for myself, it was from the source where it came from. And so, although it wasn't practical and useful, that was the thought behind it. So I shared that with my sister, and she said, I had another one, and she said, one day it was Dad's birthday, and I saw him sitting in the living room in the rocking chair, and it looked like no one was going to pay attention to the fact that it was his birthday. So I went to the kitchen. I didn't know the first thing about making a cake, so I made a cake. Then I had to put icing, and couldn't find anything, so I made blue icing, and I brought a cake and gave birthday cake to Dad. And he was amazed, just like, wow. And she said similarly, a little tear went down his cheek. Just the thoughtfulness of giving something that, you know, who wants a cake with blue icing? But it was the gesture more than the cake. And devotion is something like that. Is whatever, exactly this paragraph that's speaking about Akila Lokanath, He's the Lord of everything. So whatever that something is that we have out of everything, where did it come from? And utilize that something in service to the master, to the one who it belongs to. And the gift is the gift of love. And when one does like that, how meaningful is it to the person who is the receiver of the gift? That Krishna doesn't need the whatever it is that we give him. It's the love with which we give him whatever it is. And if we have the means and the capacity to give more qualitatively and quantitatively, then give more qualitatively and quantitatively. It doesn't have to be this stereotyped way or that stereotyped way. It's there's standard ways, but a gift from the heart. And while I'm thinking of it, I had another experience similar. I was visiting somewhere. It was an international destination, and the flight came in at one of those ungodly hours, like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. And you know how they—I don't know why they do that—but they, you know, they like you come to America from India, and it's some ridiculous hour in the morning, so you're completely like zoned out, and you get in the plane. So similarly, in this case, it was landing at one of those ungodly hours, and so I arrived, and forget exactly how it happened, but I was scheduled to give the morning class or Mangal Arati or something like that. And so I was, you know, after the travel, went to take a shower, putting on tilak and put on my dhoti. And as I was putting on the dhoti, a little girl, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years old, didn't even knock on the door. She just came in. Maharaj! She couldn't wait till I had my dhoti on. And she wanted to give me a gift. And I said, okay, thank you very much. Let me finish putting my dhoti on. And she smiled and left. And when I opened it up, it was necklaces that she had made with unmatching beads. And, you know, probably a tear came to my eye. I don't remember exactly. But it wasn't, what was the meaning of, she couldn't even wait. She just wanted to give this little gift to Maharaj that she had personally made, and it was very, very, very moving. And it's, to this day, I don't forget it. It's, although so many things may have happened, something like that, that's one that's particularly outstanding. The gift that we offer to Krishna, even something as simple as his holy name, which is him and his, but if it's offered specially with feeling, with love, the reciprocation obviously is going to be there. Even in the case of Ajamila, he wasn't even intending to call Narayana, the Lord. He was intending to call his son. What's your name? What's your name?
Gaurang.
Gaurang. Oh, such a nice name. So supposing your father is calling, Gaurang, Gaurang, please come and have your meal. Gaurang, please come and take your bath. Gaurang, please don't talk during class. But you're doing that. He's calling you. But what does Lord Gauranga think? Oh, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, oh, he's calling my name. Although it was not intended to call, he's calling you, he's calling Gauranga's name. I must protect him. Isn't that nice? So when your dad is calling you, Lord Chaitanya is protecting your dad. And so many other names that we may call our children, names of the Supreme Lord. And he's so merciful. Even in that circumstance, our acharyas describe what to speak of someone who, like Gajendra, is calling the name of the Supreme Lord. Help! Krishna! he came at once. In the case of Ajamila, he didn't come himself, he sent his messengers, the Yamadutas, the Vishnudutas. At once they came on the scene. And sometimes he'll send Narada Muni, and sometimes he'll send a Harinam party, and sometimes he'll send a book distributor, and sometimes he has so many representatives he'll send. So many. And when we receive those persons, we're very fortunate. Because with those persons comes mercy. Mercy of the Supreme Lord, which is awesome. It's everything. Everything spiritually is everything. So by practicing chanting the holy name, this is conclusion. By practicing regularly chanting the holy name, by regularly joining in congregational chanting kirtan, by worshipping the deity form of the Lord and calling his name, by regularly reciting and hearing Shravanam Kirtanam, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, all that is auspicious comes into our lives. Just by that mere act, because Krishna sees and Krishna is pleased and Krishna reciprocates. He's there in the message itself, he's there in that sound vibration. And his personal feature comes in touch with us and awakens our attraction for him, and by that, detachment from all other things. Not throw them away, but the material attachment that causes misery because of attachment is relieved, is mitigated. That the potency is there. This is an all auspicious process. We're very fortunate. And here we're getting the description through this Gajendra Leela of how fortunate we are, like Gajendra. The Lord's presence in our life is there by our calling his name sincerely and his delivering us from material existence is there just in that devotional act. And even more importantly, our eternal loving relationship with him is restored. At least the potency is there. We can hang on to material existence if we want, even when doing those things. But the potency is there to carry us on the other side of material existence. He's the deliverer like that. Varun fell asleep. Okay, any comments or questions?
When Gajendra was praying to the Supreme Lord, like he was he like praying to a specific person, or just saying like Lord of the Universe in a general term, or was he using like specific names for addressing the Supreme Lord, rather than like those terms that you read out? Was he using the names?
I understand your question. You've read the purport. You've read the commentary. Yes, that's why you're asking the question. In the commentary, it specifically says he didn't. It was general terms. But Lord Vishnu understood it meant him, and Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they understood it didn't mean them. So Lord Vishnu came. Now that's what it says in the 8th canto. Here it's saying, he called his name. Now, with the names, there are two different categories. They're names that identify the post, and there's secondary names, and there's primary names that identify the person. So it doesn't specify here. It says he called the name. But primary names, since a comparison is, primary names are, according to the scripture, Harinam Chintamani, are such names as Nandanandana, and Yasoda Nandana, and Girivaridhari, the lifter of the hill of Govardhan, and so forth. Krishna performing loving pastimes with his devotees. Those are primary names. And the secondary names are names that identify the position or the post, like these.
Lord of the universe.
Yeah. So, Govindam Adipurusham. Adipurusha is a post, but it's as a person occupying the post. Govindam Adipurusham. Okay?
In this case, like, even though he did not address the specific name, but still the Supreme Lord came.
That's correct. Yes. Well, he knew the intention. So when we call names, not just the sound vibration, but intention is also significant. Even when calling the name of his son, the intention wasn't the Supreme Lord, it was his son. Still, immense potency is there. Sanketya Namavas, where the intention is something else. But when there's intention specifically, that's intensifies the nature of the calling, or intensifies the personalism of the calling. Anything else?
Maharaj, like, I just vaguely remember in the Bhagavadam, like, I don't remember exactly the name of the sage. He calls, like, because he wants a son, like the Supreme Lord, and he calls out the name. I don't know if it's Atreya Muni, I couldn't remember the name. And then everybody comes, like, all three came.
Yeah. That's correct. And so, partial incarnations of each of the three became their sons. Mm-hmm. Dattatreya is the partial incarnation. Some voice over here? Someone? Oh, what's up?
Gajendra, like being in the body of the elephant and in so much distress and kind of punishment in the leg in the mouth of the crocodile, not only and it is not just like, okay, remove me this distress, but his prayer was genuine, and he chanted the holy name, and not only that, in spite of the situation, he heard the holy name, and that's what he's saying, like, Sharana Mangala, meaning he experienced the sweetness and everything about the holy name. So,
well, you're elaborating a little bit, aren't you?
That's my like very quickly from that distressed position and to like tasting the holy name, we just went like that. So he became a first level devotee. How did it happen?
Well, your elaboration I don't find in the commentary, but except this part in the eighth canto, that his position from desperation and fear moved to the position of feeling shelter, to the position of gratitude. He became moved from those positions, and you're, so how did he move through those positions? Through the two parts that are there within bhakti, his intense shelter taking and the descending mercy. So the descending mercy is always there, just we're not accessing it because we're distracted. But he was very fixed in shelter taking. And so he moved from distress to feeling protected to gratitude. Okay. Is that all right? Okay. Something else?
I have a question.
Okay.
The crocodile, when it was killed, it was reinstated in the position of Gandharva versus the elephant was taken back to Garud. So there's a difference. What's the reason behind the difference? And in the Kurukshetra war, those who were killed, they went back to Garud too, but this crocodile was reinstated into Gandharva. Is that correct? Or?
To my knowledge, yes. But here's another one. When Nalakovir and Manigriva were relieved from the position of trees, they went back to the position of being in the heavenly kingdom as sons of Kuvera. So, my understanding, at least in terms of Nalakovir and Manigriva, they didn't go back in the same consciousness. They became greatly elevated devotees, freed from the material contamination that they were previously subjected to. Not just, back to the same old. Now, there isn't, I'm not aware of commentary that says where that particular Gandharva went. He received his Gandharva form, and that's all that I'm aware of. Anyone else in the room aware of something further? What happened to that Gandharva? At least one can assume that whatever bondage to the guna and karma of thinking of himself as an enjoyer of his Gandharva position was removed, mitigated. At least that much. That kind of liberation.
Can we take it as like Krishna being the supremely independent? He can choose to take someone one way versus someone else some other way.
Certainly that's the case. But what's the consciousness is more what the concern is. Where did he go? What was his consciousness? At least, because I don't wish to say without the commentary of our acharyas what the destination was and his consciousness. But minimally we can understand he was released from the bondage of his past karmas. It's for sure. Here's a doubt that I don't have the answer to, at least not at the moment. It's a doubt that's been there for some time, and that is, are there not varieties of back to Godhead? So, to enter into Vaikuntha, back to Godhead, or Krishna Loka, back to Godhead, doesn't there have to be a voluntary spirit of bhakti with volition? Say, yes, I want to be in Krishna's service. Or is there some part of Goloka and Vaikuntha where there are some living entities that didn't say yes, but they're liberated? They're saying yes, I want to serve. So those persons who were liberated, who were killed on the Kurukshetra battle, what does that mean? What type of back to Godhead or liberation did they achieve? That's been a question that I don't have the answer to. And I haven't seen anywhere. Maybe our Bhagavad Gita scholars sitting on the couch over there have an answer.
The only thought I have is that it's there, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, Sadhikavinoy, Shabnadi Sujitaka. So maybe that's the answer, that Krishna's, by being present with Krishna, it's awakened, because it is there. That's the only thought I have.
Shravanadi. Shuddha Chitta, beginning with. So what hearing and chanting did they do?
Maybe it's a shortcut.
Shortcut. We'll do some research.
No, this is good. Thank you.
I'm sure there's an answer in the commentary of our acharyas. I'm sure. You know, what was the destination as opposed to, you know, like, you know, the washerman that Krishna, you know, gave his little release of the talking part of his body and the rest of his body, like he did with the chomping part of the crocodile. So what's the destination of those persons? In this case, the crocodile manifested his Gandharva form because he was also cursed. But anyway, what are the destination of those persons? Anything else? Going once.
I can ask one.
Okay.
This is not related to the class, but like when we do chanting on the japa beats versus chanting in the kirtan, there's a difference in the taste we get.
Yeah.
Is it because of the music or because of the holy name? Or it's both?
He knows this one very well.
I was distracted, but I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
Okay, I heard the question. I'll tell you. Attraction for chanting, japa, attraction for chanting the holy name, what's the difference? Is it the music? So, it's kind of obvious. If it was the holy name that the attraction is for, it would be the same. But if there is not the same, then it's some additional elements that help us to be attracted. Vatsal, we were at a japa retreat in the Houston temple, and Vatsal wanted to speak about this one. And Vatsal's Prabhupada disciple lives there. So, you know, loves kirtan. He loves japa too. So, there's he was describing, and Vadahari similarly commented, there's a social aspect. There's a music aspect, and we're social beings, and so we like that, the social. You know, some persons have propensity towards music more than others do, and so I think we're okay. Huh? It's getting hot. You want the thermostat changed? Open the window a little bit. I thought you were pointing to the speaker. So did she. Is there no thermostat? That's no? You cut it off. Okay.
Close the other one. Yeah, this good. Yeah, that's good.
Ah, very good. Okay. Now the people over there are going to freeze. And you take on that austerity for the rest of us. Okay. There's the difference. It's a mix of some attraction for the holy name, or as Lord Chaitanya says, unfortunate as I am, I have no attraction for the holy name. And the same kind of, let's say, spiritual conception, or the humility that when one chants with absorption is there, or is required in order to chant with absorption, the same requirement isn't there. And so, you know, the social and the musical aspect makes it attractive and easy. And then we really find out what attraction for the holy name we have and we chant japa. So, but they're both good, certainly. And the glorification is to Sankirtan, the congregational chanting of the holy name. Anyway. Anyone else? Yes. It's fine.
So, Maharaj, like Narada Mahamuni, basically.
Who?
Narada Mahamuni.
Narada Muni.
Yeah.
Narada Muni. We're used to hearing Narada Muni. Narada Muni.
Narada Muni, like, I have seen that, like, heard that in stories, like, he's initiator, like, basically, he's the initiator for Valmiki, that, like.
So many.
Yeah, and many. So, my thing is, like, why he's not getting worshipped? Like, he basically made more devotees.
He's a great devotee. We honor him. We honor him. But, you know, I don't understand your question.
Why we are not, like, really, like, worshipping him?
Well, we're not, like, worshipping him because he's in our disciplic succession. We honor him in many, many, many ways as appropriate for his position. He's an empowered incarnation of the Supreme Lord. Besides, he's initiator of many people. He's a Shaktivesh avatar. He's bearing the Lord's Bhakti Shakti in full. He's awesome.
Yeah.
So don't say it again. We honor him in an appropriate way. We're not worshipping him, we honor him in an appropriate way. What about Vyasadeva? Or anyone else that you might identify? They're honored in an appropriate way. Don't ask it again. Yeah, but... Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.